Hello and welcome to another Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. Today is Saturday, June the 30th of 2018, the last day of June. And in this episode of Word Magazine, I'm going to get back to some of the bread and butter of this podcast, and that has been text criticism, issues with the text and translation of the Bible. And there was one passage that I ran across recently that drew my attention to the issue of text again. I've been preaching through the Gospel of John, thoroughly enjoying that. And sometime back, I had preached on John 6, verse 69, where in the King James Version, we have what is sometimes called Peter's confession. This is the Johannine version of that, where in verse 68, it says, "Then Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life." And then verse 69, Peter continues, "And we believe and are sure that thou art that Christ, the Son of the living God." And I remember when I preached on that passage, I thoroughly enjoyed expositing that verse. And I drew attention to a parallel with Acts chapter 8 and verse 37, which is a verse that is often relegated to the footnotes in many modern translations, but it is the account of the Ethiopian eunuch's confession to Philip before he is baptized. And in Acts 8:37, it says, "And Philip said, If thou believest with all thine heart, thou mayest. And he answered," this is the Ethiopian eunuch, "and said, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God." And I remember when I preached on John 6:69, talking about this as a fundamental confession, much like the early confession, Jesus is Lord, that for the early Christians to say, "I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God," or "I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God," would have been a fundamental confession of faith based on what Peter had confessed about Christ, based on what the Ethiopian eunuch had confessed about Christ. And then just last Sunday, I was preaching on John 11. And in John 11, we have the account of the raising of Lazarus. And as part of the lead up to that, Jesus has a conversation with Martha, wherein he declares, "I am the resurrection and the life," in John 11:25. And then he says at the end of verse 26, Jesus does to Martha, "Believest thou this?" Do you believe this? And she says in verse 27, "Yea, Lord," or "Yes, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world." And I think even when I preached on that, I went back to John 6:69, I went forward to Acts 8:37, and I talked about, again, this foundational confessional language. Who is a Christian? Who is a believer? It is one who confesses with his mouth that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, or the Son of the living God. When I had preached on John 6:69, I had not, I'm using the King James Version, reading older commentaries, reading Calvin's commentary, Matthew Henry, and I had not really picked up on the textual issues with John 6:69. And it came to my attention because I think I mentioned last time I've been reading through David Bentley Hart's recent translation of the New Testament. And David Bentley Hart is an Orthodox philosopher, theologian, and he has this new translation of the New Testament that's published by Yale. I've been reading through it. And I went back and was reading. I just finished reading the Gospel of John. I was reading a few select passages. And when I went back and read David Bentley Hart's translation of Peter's confession in John 6:69, I noticed that he said, "You are the Christ." Not you are the Christ, but you are the Holy One of God. And I realized that there was a text problem or a text issue here because David Bentley Hart is generally following the modern critical text, even though he's Orthodox, and the Orthodox are normally following the traditional text, even the Textus Receptus for the New Testament. The issue is, what should the proper translation of John 6:69, Peter's confession, what should that confession, how should it read in a standard edition of the New Testament? And so that's what I want to address a little bit in this episode of Word Magazine. Of course, I'm going to put, as I usually do, a post to my blog, jeffriddle.net, and you can look there as I'll post my notes and I'll post information about some of the external evidence we're going to look at and so forth if you want to read that and follow it a little more closely. So again, let me just review what the issue is by comparing how John 6:69 is handled in various translations. Then I'm going to look at the external evidence, the manuscript evidence, and then I'm going to look at the internal evidence. How does each reading compare with the rest of the vocabulary style theology of the Gospel of John? And then I'll offer a concluding analysis relating to the text of John 6:69. So the issue is, how should Peter's confession in John 6:69 read? And I've already mentioned the translation that's offered in the King James Version, which follows the traditional text or the Textus Receptus. And so again, in the King James Version, John 6:69 reads, "And we believe and are sure that thou art that Christ, the Son of the living God." Also, if you look at the New King James Version, it reads, "Also, we have come to believe and know that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God." So Peter's confession was that Jesus is the Christ, the Christos, and the Son of the living God. However, if you compare translations that are based on the modern critical text, you find a different reading. And so the Revised Standard Version, for example, reads, "And we have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God." Likewise, the English Standard Version is exactly the same as the RSV. "And we have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God." I often like to point people to the parallels, by the way, just say parenthetically, between the Revised Standard Version and the English Standard Version. I remember it really confounded me a few years ago when the ESV was being pushed by Crossway, and they had John Piper do a talk at an ETS, Evangelical Theological Society, meeting something like the ESV and the Tyndale tradition. And of course, the ESV does not follow in the Tyndale King James Version tradition. It follows in the Revised English Version tradition, as evidenced in not only the Revised English Version that came out in the late 19th century, but also in the new edition of it known as the Revised Standard Version in 1952. And I like to point out that the English Standard Version is simply a revision of the old RSV, which is was the liberal translation that was much criticized by evangelicals for things like its reading of the Isaiah passage, "A virgin shall conceive and bear a son," where it said, "A young woman shall conceive and bear a son," Isaiah 7:14. The ESV is an evangelical version of the RSV. And yes, they properly changed the reading of Isaiah 7:14, but there are other readings that most of the readings in the ESV are simply the same as the RSV. So people think they have an evangelical Bible when really what they have is the RSV cleaned up in places. The traditional reading, like the King James Version, New King James Version, Peter's confession is, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God," in John 6:69. However, in the modern translations that are based on the modern critical text, it reads, "You are the Holy One of God." The New American Standard Bible, which occasionally follows the traditional reading, here follows the modern critical one. It reads, "We have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God." So I next went to, after comparing translations and seeing this divide between the traditional reading and the modern reading, I went to my Nessel Alon 28th edition. This is the most recent edition of the modern critical text, printed by the German Bible Society. And I went to their apparatus. And whatever you think about the modern critical text, the Nessel Alon handbooks are an amazing accomplishment. The apparatus it finds a way to include mounds of information using a specific abbreviation system, and it provides so much information. So there's a use for these scholarly works, even if one doesn't agree with the text that they arrive at. And so I do, I am very thankful for the labors that have gone on into creating these scholarly editions of the Bible. Again, even if I don't agree with the text that they support. So I looked at verse 69 here at the disputed reading relating to the confession of Peter. And I see that they list four different readings, and the last of which of the readings they list is the one that they adopted in the modern critical text. And I have created a little table where I've modified some of the information in the apparatus, in the Nessel Alon 28th edition apparatus. And I'm going to post this again when I do this blog post at jeffriddle.net, and you can look at it for yourself. So here are the four readings, along with the manuscript evidence that's given in support in the Nessel Alon apparatus. So the first reading it lists is this: Ha Christos, Ha Hagios, Tu Theou, which would be translated the Christ, the Holy One of God. So again, the modern critical reading is the Holy One of God. The traditional reading, King James Version, is the Christ, the Son of the living God. But the first reading that's listed in the apparatus is the Christ, the Holy One of God. And this reading is found in Papyrus 66, which is a very early papyrus dating to about the year 200. That's the only Greek manuscript it's found in. However, it is found in several of the versions. It's found in some Sahidic manuscripts, and it's found in the Boharic. The second reading it lists is Ha Christos, Ha Huios, Tu Theou, Tu Zontas. And this is the traditional text reading. So the Christ, the Son of the living God. And this is found, it lists some of the uncial manuscripts in which this is found, including manuscript K, manuscript N, manuscript Gamma, manuscript Delta, manuscript Theta, which is Korodethi. And it says it's in the corrected version of that, so not in the original. We'll see the original in a moment, but someone corrected it to read as it is in the traditional text, Codex Tsai. In the manuscripts that are known as Family 13, And then it lists some minuscules, minuscule 579, minuscule 700, minuscule 892, minuscule 1241, minuscule 1424. Then it says it's in the vast majority of Greek manuscripts. So this is the reading that appears in hundreds, probably well over 1,000 manuscripts. This appears in the Byzantine manuscripts. So this is the majority text reading. Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." It also, according to the Nestle-Aland apparatus, appears in some of the early versions, including in the Syriac, the Philoxenian, and the Heraclean Syriac, and in some manuscripts of the Boharic, even though, as I said already, that the Boharic readings apparently from the apparatus primarily read the Christ, the Holy One of God. The third reading that is provided in the Nestle-Aland apparatus is Ha Christos, Ha Huios, Tu Theou, which would be rendered the Christ, the Son of God. And it just, this reading would simply just omit the adjective living, zontos. So it'd be the Christ, the Son of God. And this is found in manuscript C, Codex C, which is an uncial, and it says it's in the third corrector. So apparently they're saying it wasn't in the original, wasn't in the second corrector, but it was there in the third corrector. It's also this is the original reading in Korodethi, Codex Theta. And apparently it was corrected with someone writing in the margin zontos, but the original hand of Korodethi just said the Christ, the Son of God. It's also in, this is the reading of Family 1, and in the minuscules 33 and 565. It's also the reading found in the Old Latin and in some of the other Syriac traditions, including the Sinaitic Syriac and the Curatonian Syriac. But as we'll see in a moment, I mean, by and large, this third reading they give, it basically supports the traditional reading, except it doesn't have the word living. It says the Christ, the Son of God, whereas the traditional reading is the Christ, the Son of the living God. So we're talking about simply the inclusion or exclusion of the adjective, the living. And then the fourth and final reading, and this is the one adopted in the modern critical text, is Ha Hagios Tu Theou. That is the Holy One of God. And this is found in P75, Papyrus 75. This is also the reading that is found in Sinaiticus and Vaticanus, the two heavyweight unseals that were so beloved of Westcott and Hort. And again, they made their decisions in the modern critical texts of the 19th century based on Sinaiticus and Vaticanus. They were not dependent on the papyri evidence. So this wasn't a reading that came about with the discovery of P75. They were relying on the 4th century unseals, Sinaiticus and Vaticanus. Actually, as we'll see in a moment, the discovery of P66 and the earlier reading being the Christ actually is an example of papyri evidence, I think, lending support to the traditional reading. It's also in the original hand of Codex C, as I've already mentioned. This is apparently the reading. Codices D, L, W, which is Codex Washingtoniensis. It's also in some Sahidic manuscripts, and it's in the versional tradition that's known or notated as PBO. I had to look that one up. I didn't remember offhand what that was. That is the Proto-Boharic. I'm not an expert in Boharic, but apparently they make some distinction between early and late Boharic, so they're saying this is in the Proto-Boharic. So hope that this information isn't too complicated. Again, I think it'll be clearer if you look at the little table that I'm going to put up on my blog jeffriddle.net. So check that out if you've had a hard time following these four options. Let me just review them just one more time in English. So the four options are: first, the Christ, the Holy One of God. It's in P66. Secondly, the traditional reading, the Christ, the Son of the Living God, and it's in the vast majority of manuscripts. The third possibility is the Christ, the Son of God, which is in original hand of Korodethi. By the way, I should also point out, and this will be noted in the table, there are at least two manuscripts where, for this third reading, the introductory, the Christ, is missing. It's in one Latin manuscript, B, and in apparently in the Curitonian Syriac. The reading is just the Son of God rather than the Christ, the Son of God. And then the fourth reading is the Holy One of God. And this is the one adopted in the modern critical text, and it's in Sinaiticus Vaticanus, and it's also in P75. So just a couple of observations about some of this external evidence. Some of this I've kind of already noted, but P66, which dates to about 200, provides early evidence for the appearance of the Christ as being part of Peter's confession. You are the Christ. It does, again, go on to read the Christ, the Holy One of God, rather than the Christ, the Son of the Living God, but at least it is, at the earliest levels, the confession was known to include a declaration that Jesus is the Christ or the Messiah. Another observation, it seems that the two nouns, hahagios, or I might say a substantive coming from the adjective holy, the hahagios, the Holy One, and hahuios, the noun, the Son, are close enough in form. And they both end with an iota, omicron, and a final sigma. They're close enough in form that we might easily imagine that there could have been scribal confusion, unintentional scribal confusion in the copying of these words. So if the original read the Christ, the Son of the Living God, we might be able to see how someone could have accidentally written the Christ, the Holy One, and we could see how they also could have omitted living, the Christ, the Holy One of God, or they could have just omitted the Christ and said the Holy One of God. So that's a possible way that the reading adopted by the modern critical text, I think, could plausibly have developed. Another observation, as I've already noted, actually that the third set of readings, again, which is the Christ, the Son of God, is actually, they actually support the traditional reading, the only difference being that they simply leave off the adjective living, the Christ, the Son, Christ, the Son of God, rather than Christ, the Son of the Living God. Now, what did Bruce Metzger say in his textual commentary? And I looked at the most recent edition of it, which was the second edition of it. And Metzger, in his commentary on John 6:69, speculates that the reading of the modern critical text, which he takes to be original, and he was still, you know, working in the 20th century and was still a text critic who could talk about finding the original. And one of the problems with modern text criticism, we noted before, is they've essentially abandoned. They don't think that it's their task at all to try to reconstruct the original. They talk about there being many texts of the Bible, all of them being equally valid. But Metzger was still operating under the assumption that he could get the original. He could take away the corruption, smooth out the barnacles that had accumulated on the hull, and get back to the original. And he suggests that the modern critical text reading is the original, that originally Peter's confession was, "You are the Holy One of God." And this then was expanded, he says, in various ways by copyists, perhaps in imitation of expressions in John 1:49, John 11:17, and Matthew 16:16. And I've said before in statements about Bruce Metzger, his commentary on the Greek New Testament is just a masterful example of speculation and language that makes statements but throws in limiting language that sort of hides the speculative value of what he has to say. Again, he says that it was expanded in various ways by copyists, perhaps in imitation of expressions elsewhere. Does he know this for sure, that it was, that the scribes changed it, trying to imitate other parts of John's gospel? No, he doesn't know it. That's why he puts in the qualifier, perhaps. So the qualifications he mentions, John 1:49, we're going to come back to this later. But this is where Nathanael says to Jesus, "Rabbi, thou art the Son of God, thou art the King of Israel." So Metzger's saying, if you look at, you know, John 1:49, Nathanael says to Jesus, "You are the Son of God." And some scribe read that, and then he gets to John 6:69, and he wants to improve the text a little bit. And instead of having Peter say, "You are the Holy One of God," he just changed it a little bit to, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Now, if he were trying to make it conform to Nathanael's confession, why wouldn't he have said, had Peter say, "You are the Christ, you are," as he says in John 1:49, "the King of Israel"? But he doesn't do that. He doesn't conform it precisely to what Nathanael said. The other one he mentions, and this is another one that we'll discuss, is John chapter 11 and verse 27. And John 11:27, where this is Martha's confession in John 11:27. Read this earlier. Where she says, "I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world." And again, Metzger's saying some scribes wanted to smooth the text out. And when they got to John 6:69, they knew what Martha had said. Now, this is kind of strange because if they're copying and they're at John 6:69, they haven't gotten to 11:27 yet. But he's saying they would have known Martha's confession. And so they just harmonized, and they had Peter say what Martha, something similar to what Martha will say in John 11:27. And then the last passage that he mentions as a possible source of harmonization is Peter's famous confession in Matthew 16:16, where Peter confesses to Jesus, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And this is, you know, certainly language that is much closer to John 6:69. Of course, the traditional Christian would say, well, yeah, it's closer because this was Peter's confession. Matthew 16:16 is Peter's confession. "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And John is simply accurately recording precisely what Peter said. "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." But Metzger can't see that because he doesn't uphold the historicity of Matthew's account or John's account. Instead, it seems much more plausible to him to postulate that John originally read Peter's confession as, "You are the Holy One of God," and then some scribes harmonized it with Matthew 16:16. So that is a summary of the external evidence, the external manuscript evidence. So let's transition and look at some of the internal evidence. By internal evidence, now we're looking at the Gospel of John and we're saying which reading makes the most sense, which reading is most consistent with the rest of the Gospel of John, both with regard to its language, its theology, its presentation of Jesus, its presentation of Peter's confession, which is more consistent. So I did a little bit of thinking about this and a little bit of looking and comparing in John and other places in the New Testament. Certainly more could be done, but let me just share with you some of the preliminary things that I found and some of my preliminary thoughts on this. First thing that I would say is in no other place in the Gospel of John is Jesus ever called the Holy One of God. So if John 6:69, if the original reading is Peter saying, "You are the Holy One of God," this is the only occurrence of this title for Jesus within the Gospel of John. There isn't even any other place in the Gospel of John where the adjective hagios is used to describe Jesus. Although Jesus is referred to as holy in other places in the New Testament, we have to grant that there was apparently a scriptural tradition. There is apparently a scriptural tradition where Jesus is referred to as being holy or the Holy One. And a few places where we can see this is in Luke chapter 1 and verse 35. Let me just look at that briefly. Luke 1 and verse 35. So this is from the birth narrative. And here we have the angel Gabriel's appearance to Mary. And he says, the angel says, "The Holy Ghost shall come upon thee, and the power of the highest shall overshadow thee. Therefore, also that holy thing which shall be born of thee shall be called the Son of God." So there's a place where Jesus is referred to as that holy thing or that holy one. And it's interesting, there's also the title, the Son of God, that appears. But anyways, and there are other places, Luke 4:34, Acts 2:27, Acts 4:27, Acts 4:30, Acts 13:35, the Acts 2 passage, Acts 2:27 and Acts 13:35, both are making reference to the use of Psalm 16. You will not let your Holy One to see corruption. So there is a tradition in the New Testament. There is an early Christian tradition, scriptural tradition, that refers to Jesus as the Holy One, or uses the adjective holy to describe him. But that's not a typical title that's found anywhere else in John, other than, if again, original at John 6:69, if you follow the modern critical text. There are at least three other places in John where the adjective holy is used to describe the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit. You can look at John 1:33, John 14:26, John 20:22. So if you say, what is the most frequent use of holy, it is to describe the Holy Spirit. There is also one place in Jesus' high priestly prayer in John 17, verse 11, where Jesus in prayer refers to God the Father as Holy Father. So we've got one reference to God the Father as holy, John 17:11, three references to the Spirit of God as holy, John 1:33, John 14:26, John 20:22, and no other place outside of John 6:69 in the modern critical text where Jesus is referred to as holy. On the other hand, the titles Christ and Son of God are very prominent titles for Jesus in the Gospel of John. He is frequently called Christ or the Christ, and he's frequently referred to as the Son of God. Let me just scan both of those for a moment. First of all, he is often called the Christ, and this starts very early. I'm not sure that the people who call him the Christ always understand how he understands himself as a suffering Messiah. But if you look at John 1, verse 41, the very opening chapter, we have the account of Andrew coming to his brother Simon and saying, "We have found the Messias," which is being interpreted the Christ or HaKristos. And then if you look over in John chapter 4, verses 25 and 26, where Jesus has the conversation with the Samaritan woman at the well, there's a very intriguing part of this conversation where in John 4:25, the woman says to him, "I know that Messias cometh, which is called Christ. When he has come, he will tell us all things." And then in verse 26 of John 4, John records, "John saith unto her, I that speak unto thee am he." In other words, a roundabout way of saying, "I am the Christ. I am the Messiah. I that speak unto thee am he." So this title Christ is very prominent. We can also look at other places, like when Jesus is in Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles in John 7. There is a fierce debate among the Jews whom Jesus encounters over whether Jesus is HaKristos, whether he is the Christ. So look at John 7, verse 26, where the people say, "But lo, he speaketh boldly, and they say nothing unto him. Do the rulers know indeed that this is the very Christ?" And then verse 27, "Howbeit, we know this man whence he is, but when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is." Likewise, in John 7:31, it says, "And many of the people believed on him and said, when Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done?" We can also notice there in verse 31 of John 7, the teaming up the verb of to believe and the title of Christ. And then we can also look in John 7, verses 41 and 42, where it says, others said, "This is the Christ. But some said, shall Christ come out of Galilee? Hath not the scripture said that Christ cometh of the seed of David and out of the town of Bethlehem, where David was?" So here's further debate about whether Jesus is the Christ. And of course, it's very interesting. John does not record the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. He obviously knows that. He begins his account of Jesus in pre-existence. "In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God." But he obviously knows Jesus was born in Bethlehem, and he has this sort of ironic and humorous scene where people are saying, "But he's from Galilee, and the scriptures say the Messiah doesn't come from Galilee. The Messiah will come from the city of David, from Bethlehem." And we, the readers, know, duh, yes, he was born in Bethlehem, even if John doesn't record the narrative, the birth narrative, as in Matthew 1 and 2 and Luke 1 and 2. The point here, though, is that the title Christ is very prominent in the Gospel of John, as is the title Son of God. Again, Metzger noted, we already discussed how Nathanael in John 1:49 refers to Jesus as the Son of God, the King of Israel. And isn't it interesting, in the very first chapter, in the very first followers, we've got Andrew saying that Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah. And we have Nathanael saying Jesus is the Son of God. And if we take the traditional text, what do we have in John 6:69? We have Simon, Peter, combining the two titles, the confession of Andrew, "You are the Christ," and the confession of Nathanael, "The Son of God," or "The Son of the Living God," as it says in the traditional reading of John 6:69. And again, we already noted that this confession also appears in Martha's confession In John 11:27, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. And here's something that's interesting as well. Whereas with the title Christ, we had this sort of roundabout self-revelation by Jesus that he is the Messiah to the woman at the well. And we have something very similar with regard to the title Son of God in Jesus' conversation, as recorded by the Apostle John, with the man born blind, whom he healed. And if you look at John 9, verse 35, Jesus is talking with him, and he says, "Dost thou believe on the Son of God?" And the fellow answers in verse 36, "Who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him?" And then in John 9:37, it says, "And Jesus said unto him, Thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee." And so this roundabout self-revelation of Jesus' identity as the Son of God sounds very much like what he said with the Samaritan woman at the well in John 4:26 with regard to the title Christ, when he said, "I that speak unto thee am he." Well, as for the combination then of these two titles, the Christ and the Son of God, this seems to be part of what we could call basic confessional Orthodox Christian language that was used to describe Jesus. And we can look and see the tandeming together of Christ and Son of God in various places in the scriptural Christian tradition. I think about the Gospel of Mark. And again, these are just some preliminary thoughts. I haven't done exhaustive research on this, but just things that came to mind. The Gospel of Mark. How does the Gospel of Mark begin? Mark 1:1, "The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God." And then likewise, when you get to the end of the Gospel of Mark, you get to Mark chapter 14. Jesus is interviewed after he is arrested by the high priest. And what does the high priest ask him in John chapter 14, verse 61? It says, "Again, the high priest asked him and said unto him, Art thou the Christ, the Son of the Blessed?" Now, there is a Semitic circumlocution. He doesn't say, "Are you the Christ, the Son of God?" But he says, "Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One?" Which, again, would have been a pious Semitic circumlocution, rather than saying the Son of God. He says the Son of the Blessed, or the Son of the Blessed One. And then, as I've already mentioned, in thinking about this as a traditional, confessional, Orthodox statement or a joint title or declaration about Jesus, we can go back again to that disputed passage that is left out, relegated to the footnotes in many modern translations of the Bible. I think it should be there. By the way, I've done an earlier Word Magazine on Acts 8:37. I think I titled it, "Is Acts 8:37 Part of the Bible or Part of the New Testament?" But this is the Ethiopian eunuch's confession before he is baptized, where he says, "I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God." And we could certainly imagine how that, based on its usage and the tradition of this being the statement of the Ethiopian eunuch, how this might have been adopted by early Christians as a baptismal confession. You know, in my practice as a pastor, I typically have called upon those who are baptismal candidates to make a confession of faith. And I think baptism is the proper place to make a so-called profession of faith. I mentioned this in preaching last Sunday. The Bible doesn't mention these professions of faith being made on the sawdust trail at the altar during an altar call, but it typically depicts confessions of faith being made at baptism, like in the description of the baptism of the Ethiopian eunuch in Acts 8:37. And anyways, I typically have asked people want to make the confession, Jesus is Lord, based on Romans 10:9. If you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God has raised from the dead, you will be saved. Or the Christ hymn in Philippians, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Or in 1 Corinthians 12, where Paul says, no one can say Jesus is Lord except by the Holy Spirit. But I think the next time I perform a baptismal service, I'm going to adopt the confession of faith of the Ethiopian eunuch, and I'm going to ask those that I am baptizing if they will say, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And we actually have a couple of baptismal candidates, and we'll be having a baptism, God willing, next month. And I will plan to ask those who are to be baptized to make that confession, and I think they gladly will do that. I've also started, when we do new member interviews, and one of the first things we investigate with them is whether they are believers and whether they make a profession of faith. I've often asked them in the interview now, do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? And I ask them, you know, just to confess that, yes, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, as part of our counseling and discernment process of presenting them for membership or as candidates for baptism. So we have this orthodox basic confession, and if we adopt the traditional text, we have it there in Acts 8:37. We have it there in Martha's confession in Acts 11, verse 27, and we have it there in Peter's confession. In John 11, 27, Martha's confession, and in John 6:69, in Peter's confession. Let me address one more thing that Metzger raised. Metzger suggested that the traditional reading came as a result of a scribal harmonization with Matthew 16:16. And of course, Matthew 16 has the account of Jesus with the disciples at Caesarea Philippi. And he asked them, you know, whom do men say that I am? And let's turn over really quickly to Matthew 16:16 so I don't paraphrase, and I'll try to read exactly what is recorded by Matthew, authoritatively recorded. It says, this is Matthew 16:13, when Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? Verse 14, and they said, some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias or Elijah, others Jeremias or Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. He saith unto them, but whom say ye that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And so Metzger, again, in his commentary, says, well, this traditional reading where Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, that was simply a scribal harmonization with Matthew 16:16. So he assumes that the scribes have copied Matthew, and they're familiar with Peter's confession there. And so instead of putting what was John's original, you are the Holy One of God, they simply wrote, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. We might mention that there is, you know, there are differences in the synoptic accounts in recording Peter's confession. In Mark 8:29, Mark records that Peter said simply, thou art the Christ. In Luke's account, Luke 9:20, he has Peter saying, you are the Christ of God. And there's a whole another question about how do we harmonize those three statements. Pretty easy to harmonize Matthew and Mark's, because Mark's is just simply the abbreviated version of Matthew's. What about Luke's? Well, you know, I think a traditional Christian could say, well, you know, Peter probably said more than just that one statement. He probably articulated in several different ways. Luke simply records authoritatively something that Peter said, "You are the Christ of God," whereas Matthew and Mark record another statement he made, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." In Mark's case, again, he gave the short version, "You are the Christ." Matthew gave the expanded version, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." I think, though, that Metzger's approach reflects what you often find in Metzger and in modern text critics and people who work in the academy, and that is it belies a skepticism towards the supernatural aspect of the Bible, a skepticism toward the inspiration of the Bible, a skepticism toward the historicity of the Bible, a skepticism toward seeing continuity between Peter's confession in Matthew 16:16 and John's record of that same confession in John 6:69. The typical academic text critic cannot believe that what Matthew recorded could be the same as what John records, that Matthew and John could both be recording exactly what Peter said at Caesarea Philippi. Of course, John doesn't mention they were at Caesarea Philippi. John doesn't mention that Jesus had asked the disciples, who do the people say that I am? And then whom do you say that I am? He doesn't record it in the same manner as Matthew and Mark and Luke do. But they want to see, again, a big bridge and division between the Synoptic Gospels and the Gospel of John. But according to the traditional text, this is a place where Matthew and John are in harmony. And is it bad for John to be in harmony with one of the Synoptic Gospels? I don't think that it is, because we're talking about a unified Christian tradition, which is historically true. And I'm not sure that Metzger and other academic text critics, again, approach it with this believing, faithful kind of perspective. Just one more note on this. Get a sip of coffee, and a frog in my throat here. Just one more note on this. What about the adjective living, the Son of the living God? Is that something that is foreign to the Gospel of John? Is that something odd to see in the Gospel of John? And if we examine that a little more closely, it's not foreign or odd. Jesus speaks when he talks to the woman at the well, a Samaritan woman, in John 4, verses 10 and 11. He talks about the living water. But more importantly, for our context, in John 6, verse 57, we have Jesus referring to God the Father as the living Father. And so just a few verses later then, in John 6:69, it would make perfect sense for Peter to refer to Jesus as the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus is just called God the Father, the living Father. And here Peter picks up on similar language. So the traditional reading is not incongruous with John's normal usage and style. I think we've demonstrated that. The titles Christ and Son of God, and even the tandeming of the two together, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, the adjective living, the Christ, the Son of the living God, is not incongruous with the internal operations of the Gospel of John with regard to its language, with regard to its theology. In fact, I would argue that the traditional language, on the basis of, again, internal study, actually may prove that it is more fitting to the Gospel of John than is the modern critical reading, again, which never has another place outside of John 6:69, where Jesus is referred to as the Holy One or the Holy One of God. That is a statement, a title that is not congruous with the rest of the Gospel of John. So let me turn now and offer a few comments on the overall, to conclude this, some final analysis. The earliest evidence, manuscript evidence from Papyrus 66, has Peter confessing that Jesus is the Christ. Actually, P66 again reads, the Christ, the Holy One of God. But for our purposes right now, P66 says Peter's confession included him saying that Jesus is the Christ. It is conceivable, as we've noted earlier, that scribes either intentionally or unintentionally changed the Son of God or the Son of the Living God to the Holy One of God at an early stage, perhaps reflected in P66. We talked before about how this very similar ending of the two nouns that end in iota, omicron, and a final sigma, whether that is hagias, or whether that is, which is the word for holy or holy one, or huios, which is the word for son. We could see how perhaps there could have been scribal change here, either intentional change, mistaken change, or an intentional change being made. Our burden is to, in defense of the traditional reading, is to suggest reasonable ways or reasonable explanations for why it may have been altered or changed in some other traditions. Now, theologically, you know, we could go into speculations as to why some scribes would not have wanted to have had another passage where Jesus is referred to as Ha Christos, as the Messiah. But we're in the dark on that. We don't know. Again, we can speculate about theological reasons. We can speculate about scribal reasons. We don't know in the end why there were different textual traditions about Peter's confession, although we can see how this would have been a very important passage theologically, because here is someone articulating a foundational belief about Jesus. Then, on another kind of theological level, we might observe that if the traditional reading is abandoned, as the modern translations now are doing based on the modern critical text, if the traditional reading of Peter's confession being, you are the Christ, the Son of the Living God, if that is abandoned, then continuity is lost with key confessional language that is persistent, tenacious, and a very powerful tradition in early Christianity. It just preaches so well. And if we abandon this, we lose it. We lose the continuity of being able to point in our Bibles, unbelievers and believers to John 6:69 and say, here was the foundational confession of Peter, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the Living God. And by the way, this was also the confession that was made by Martha in Bethany at the death of her brother, when Jesus spoke with her and she said, when he said, do you believe I am the resurrection and the life? And do you believe that those who live and believe in me, that they will not see death? And she says, you know, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. And then we lose continuity with Acts 8:37, with the confession of the Ethiopian eunuch. You know, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Why would we abandon this beautiful, coherent, unified tradition of classical, orthodox, confessional language about who Jesus is in favor of a modern critical text reading that is based on a handful of manuscripts and a reading that was not adopted as a universal reading that was used in the vast majority of the manuscripts that were used by early Christians, a reading that was not adopted and when we had the revolution of the printing press, was not adopted in the early printed editions of the Greek New Testament, and therefore was not adopted in the earliest translations of the Bible, the New Testament, from Greek into the vernacular languages of Europe and beyond, as reflected in the Protestant Bible translations. Why would we abandon the traditional reading? And so my conclusion will not surprise you if you know my views on this. My conclusion is that the traditional reading should be upheld, and I would contend that it can be reasonably defended. You do not have to check your brains at the door to adopt the traditional text of Scripture. Again, let me read once more from John 6:69. I've paraphrased it a couple of times, and but let me read exactly what it says. John 6:69, Peter says, "And we believe and are sure that thou art that Christ, the Son of the living God." Well, I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Word Magazine, and I'll look forward to the next issue when we will examine further topics. I have several topics on text criticism lined up, as well as some topics on some other subjects, and I look forward to speaking to you soon. Till then, take care and God bless.